Butter bei die Hühnen. Folge 47. Wir sind nicht allergisch gegen Geld. Mit Santeri Wellemar und Dirk Böge. Moin und herzlich willkommen zur Folge 47 unseres Butter bei die Hühnen Podcasts. Und ich freue mich, neben einigen Zuschauern, die wir heute wieder haben, hallo zusammen, auch unsere Gäste hier, Santi, dich hier dabei zu haben. Nice to see you, Santi.
Nice to be here.
Und auf der deutschen Seite Dirk Böge, hier, den, glaube ich, jeder kennt als Hallensprecher, aber wir werden uns heute auch über andere Themen noch unterhalten, wo er für die SVG tätig ist. Ja, und von der Aufteilung machen wir es so, wie wir es eigentlich kennen. Wir starten erstmal in Englisch. Jeder darf seine Englisch-Skills wieder ein bisschen verbessern. Und dann switchen wir dann irgendwann in den deutschen Part. Und genau, dann let's start in English. And Santi, we know you as Santi, but sometimes we hear from some in streams, they don't know how to pronounce your name. Can you help us?
Yeah, I know it's a little bit difficult for the Germans, but it's supposed to be said Santeri Wellemar. I really like Santi here. I think it's easy for people to say, I really like that one.
I think by now we have heard every version of it in the from the commentators.
Yeah,
during the cup finals, I've heard Wellemar and Wellemar.
Yeah,
and Wellemar. I've heard everything.
I've heard a few different ones also. It just makes me laugh. I think it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
For us, the easiest thing is to say Santi. That's also what Stefan said. We asked him for the pronunciation and he said, say Santi. <It's> okay. We are the second episode in a Scandinavian style because our last guest was Daniel. Okay, and from where do you come from, Finland? Can you explain it in the south of Finland? I think we don't know too much towns there.
I'm from the west part of Finland, so okay. I don't know, maybe some people know a city called Vaasa. It's on the west coast of Finland, so I'm not like really close to that, but like I would say a little bit over an hour east from Vaasa.
Okay.
Really, really, really small town called Kauhava. Mm-hmm. And like I said, really tiny, tiny place, but the people are nice and have a lot of family there. Grew up like mostly only in that city or in that town, and then playing volleyball in different towns during the weekends and then coming back. So I would say until I was 15, 16 years old, I was spent most of my life in my hometown.
And also playing volleyball there?
Yeah. Okay. We have a really, really good junior club in my old
this
hometown.
The first, and I don't know if it's right when I say Kauhavan Visa.
Exactly, that's perfect. Yeah, exactly that club, and I spent my whole childhood playing for that club, and like I said, until 17 years old, and then I went to probably the next one on your list, Kuortane, and that's kind of like the, I don't know, some, like you probably understand if I say boarding school, it's kind of like a boarding school idea that you go there to practice and study at the same time, so you get a little bit more time for volleyball next to the study. So that was a good next step for me, and also what helped with the decision to go there, it was like 45 minutes away from my hometown, so it was really convenient to move there and like still kind of be close to home, so if there was time on the weekends I could go back home.
You have a brother, Anton, who's also a setter, I read. You played with him?
We played some junior seasons together, but only when we were a little bit older. So like, I was 16, 17 years old, and during that time we played together, and he was also in the boarding school 2 years before me, and then he just left before I came in, so it was perfect timing. He went out of my way.
So is it a really volleyball family, your mom and dad also playing, or only your
they,
brother?
They played when they were young kids, but they were not like really really into volleyball. They played other sports and did other things in their youth time, but I would say, yeah, maybe when me and my brother started being like teenagers, that's when our family started really moving around and with volleyball. So I think it was kind of grown into our family.
Is volleyball in Finland a bigger sport than volleyball in Germany? What would you say?
I would say that maybe a little bit smaller, but kind of on the same stage. Like here's football is also bigger, handball, right? And ice hockey is also making its way here, like bigger and bigger. But I would say also in Finland, of course, ice hockey is the biggest sport, and then football, basketball. Mm. So we are kind of in that mid-level tier, I would say.
Okay. I remember, I think, 10 years ago when national teams played against in some tournaments, and the Finnish teams, also the fans were really famous because they were really having fun and have a party.
I
remember.
Yeah, we have unbelievable fans. Like, I've been really lucky to come here and experience you guys, but like, I'm really proud of our fans with the national team. They travel like you guys. They travel on the away trips and all to the championships all around Europe. So it's, yeah, like I said, I'm lucky to be in two teams where the fan block is really great.
It's funny you said ice hockey, because right here next to Lüneburg we have a pretty successful ice hockey team. Have you been to a game yet?
I haven't been to a game, but I've heard about this team, and I think, I can't remember who, but someone of the team, I think, went to the game and was like really pushing us to go and watch a game. So I would be interested in seeing a match there.
I think they have two Finnish players as well.
Oh, really?
At least two, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
How?
Four even.
Oh, okay. How far away from Lüneburg is it?
It's like right outside. Adendorf is, when you drive to the arena, just go straight.
3 to 4 kilometers from the arena.
Oh, and they played, they have a...
Yeah, they are just now in the finals. The first games were 1-1 up to now.
Not Bundesliga though. It's
it's a third league team.
Okay,
third league. Around third league, yeah. Okay. And they also won their regional cup.
Right,
a few weeks back.
Nice. Okay. Though, yeah, I would need to get in touch with the Finnish guys there to like see how did they end up playing.
It's great. Even the fans, they're crazy.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
It's all worth a visit.
Okay. Then your third station in Finland was also. Oh, it was Hurrikaani.
Yes. Yeah,
I don't say the second word because I'm not able to, to pronounce.
Loima? Yeah, exactly.
Loima. It's second, not that hard.
Yeah, second part of the name is the town or the city. It's a little bit of a bigger city than the town where I grew up, but still a really small, but a really really like nice place for me. I found my girlfriend there, so that was huge for me, and then. Yeah, I played there 5 seasons. Really, really fell in love with the place and the people and the club.
Was it a pro league?
Yeah, that's already? Yeah, okay. That's the first league and like Bundesliga here. Yeah, so yeah, that was a really, it's a special place for me.
Okay, and the next decision you had or you made to change to an Ukrainian team. Oh, I was just who?
Yeah.
How did you feel playing for a Ukrainian team? Because I think it's not the nicest situation. Maybe I would think about.
Yeah. It's actually interesting because I remember when my agent agent told me that, okay, this would be a possibility. I also had those, like, with the situation going on with the war, I was like also a little bit like, oh, wow. But then he explained to me that they play in the Polish league, and the team is totally based in Poland. So there was kind of nothing, only connection to Ukraine was the club and the president and some of the members from the staff were kind of from Ukraine and kind of run in Ukraine. But yeah, like I said, everything happened in Poland. So there was, for me, there was kind of no connection to Ukraine or to the war, or I had no...
Just flying the Ukrainian flag.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. It was it's kind of this partnership between the Polish Plus League and this club, Barkum, that they made a deal, I think it was after the war started, that they would take this team to the Plus League because they were a really successful team in the Ukrainian League. Mm. So they were kind of too good to play in Ukraine. Mm. And the Plus League wanted to take them in, and it worked out for both parties. They're still playing in Plus League, and yeah, I think they're still staying in. They were in their relegation battle also this season, but they will stay in the Plus League.
Yeah, I think so, because I remember when you left, the next setter was a really known setter from Germany. Lucas Kamper is playing there.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say, with his 40 years.
Yeah. It's I've watched many games from them this season, and still seeing Lucas said it's unbelievable in the way he still is able to move and play, and he's keeps himself in great shape. And I was lucky enough to meet him in Mannheim during the cup final. He was working with the federation there, and I just saw him in the hallway, and yeah, we had a few jokes about the Ukrainian teammates we both know. So that was a really nice thing to meet a volleyball legend like that.
Okay.
So there really was everyone from the volleyball world at the cup finals.
Yeah, that's what it seemed like.
I said to a friend, it's like the who's who of the volleyball world, especially in Germany.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
everyone from everywhere. It's like a big family reunion, much like the Liga Cup, but way bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that also. There were a lot of familiar faces for me also.
Yeah. Even if maybe you played together in a different team, and just like very, very friendly. I really enjoyed there, even though I don't like the gym in Hildesheim too much.
Yeah.
So you played, I would say, in a really high level.
Yeah.
In the Polish.
Yeah, league? that was by far the highest level I've had experience until that point when I went there. And I first game was against Jastrzębie, and they were like Olympic champion Tony Jutti, world champion Tomasz Fornal. Like, I saw these amazing players on the first game, and it was like really, I was seeing stars in my eyes. So I was still a little bit of that volleyball fan inside me, that it was a little bit hard to concentrate to that game. But I think during that season I kind of got used to seeing those guys, and also noticed that they're also just normal humans. So it was
just doing their job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was pretty, but yeah, it was a really, really cool experience for me. And like you said, super high level volleyball.
Maybe the Plus Liga will take on Berlin as well.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, they've been talking about it, that they could easily compete there.
Yeah, I think so. I like, especially the past Berlin teams I've seen, also this season, they're really, really good. But also, like, I remember some teams with Sergei Krankin, I used to watch those games also, and I just thought that they're like this superstar team in the German league.
We've seen they're beatable, just like everyone else.
Exactly.
We'll see how it goes in the playoffs.
Yes.
Why did you decide to leave Poland? I say Poland now because you played in Poland.
For me, it was the situation there was, how would I say this? The culture within the team and the organization wasn't really how I'm like. So nothing really wrong with them, but it was just the vibe difference, I would say. I kind of wanted that same feeling that I had in Finland with that little town, small town energy and a club that has good fans and actually people come watch you play. And I really wanted that experience again and I didn't really get it there. So yeah, me and my agent kind of agreed that I should try to find something that really suits me better. And also the second big thing for me was that I wanted to have some more playing time. In that team, I wasn't playing so much. I got some good time on the court as well, but still, like, I wasn't like a regular starter. Mm. So that's the second thing why I wanted to change.
Mm. Isn't it a little bit normal when you are working as a pro? I say working.
Yeah,
that it is work.
Sometimes it is not only an emotional thing. It's sometimes only it's work. And I think if you go higher and higher in the steps, maybe there's a little less of fun. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know, but
I think you're
did you
right.
Think about.
I think you're right. I think I kind of did a big jump going from the Finnish league where it was we were really professional. But it was still more of that, like, childish joy of volleyball and just enjoyment of playing this sport that we all love. And then I made that jump to go straight to the top where it was more of, like you said, everyone doing their job and then kind of going home. And I felt like I'm not ready for that yet. I still want to have that joy of playing volleyball and playing with people that actually would do it even if they wouldn't get paid for it. Like I think a lot of people in our team right now would still be playing volleyball in their free time even if they wouldn't get paid and if it wasn't their job. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think you're right in that aspect of the higher it goes, the more it becomes more of your work.
Yeah. It could be, but I think we all have together work as fans and the players. When I was in Lisbon, I thought about what is this club making wrong? I think they are making wrong because they have, I would say, more money than the SVG, I guess. But they don't have the emotion there. They don't have the people there. Many teams from the youth came there.
Yeah.
But wasn't the fans? I don't know which real fans there were. And I think you make the sport bigger when you have enough people who are following and have a party there and enjoy this. And if you only make it with money, I don't think you can make it bigger. You can have champions. Okay, but I don't think it's making the sports greater. That's my opinion.
Yeah. No, I agree. That was the game in Sporting actually reminded me of a lot of our home games last season in Poland. They were kind of this similar thing. Sometimes people would come watch. Mm. A lot of the times they would come watch the stars from the opponent teams rather than come watch us and support us. Oof. And I'm not saying that is a bad thing. I understand it because this Ukrainian team hasn't built a fan base at any point. So I understand that the people will come watch the other teams and they are also fans of the other teams in Poland. Like even though you might live in Katowice, you could still support Jastrzębie. Doesn't really matter there. So, but yeah, I do agree with you that it's making volleyball a bigger sport in a country like Portugal can be difficult already with soccer and like other things being bigger, but still like something must be wrong with the structure of building the club And yeah, like you said, only if you do it only with money, then it can be difficult to raise the overall feeling inside the club.
I think, Dirk, you can also say something to this, because it's also your thing.
Yeah, my favorite word comes here is it's structure. Structure means that how did it start and how did it grow in Lüneburg? It started really small and without the money, so it started with all the passion, and we kept the focus on the passion. That's what it is. There's so many new spectators and people coming to see us, and around Lüneburg, we are on this level the only alternative. There's no other sport or club who's doing that, and there's so many people who come in our gym and see us play, and that's okay. They don't know anything about volleyball, but they feel the passion, and they go home with the passion, and that's why they come back. And that's what makes it so different from maybe clubs like Lisbon, because they are big, and maybe those who are coming are like soccer fans, football fans, Galatasaray as well. They have a team, and there's so many soccer fans. And when clubs come with many soccer fans, the whole atmosphere changes.
You notice it, yeah. And, you really
so,
do.
And so we are lucky to be in that position that Lüneburg started as a small club, and we kept the heart of the SVG, and that is the passion and not the money. But we're not allergic to money, so if there's
I always think about Andreas just scrubbing the floor in Reppenstedt.
Yeah.
Yes.
While Eye of the Tiger is playing.
I've seen this clip also, and
it's
I think I watched it last summer before before I came here.
Yeah.
And I just was like, oh, this is our president. That's like so cool.
You won't see, like, I can't think of any other club president in Germany doing that.
Yeah, he's special.
But I think now I have a title for the episode. We are not allergic with money. With money, you said. Okay.
Too money.
Too money, yeah.
Too money.
Not allergic to money.
Okay. That sounds good.
It might lead in the wrong direction, though. If
Speaking, okay. not exactly money, but professionalism. We have the cup final running in the background. So if one of the our guests gets distracted, it's because of that.
It's gonna be me,
probably.
We're gonna talk long because it's the first set.
Yeah,
it's gonna take some time.
We have to do all 5 sets. Please no. Fürs Protokoll, wir sitzen hier gerade an einem Montag um 20 Uhr. Das ist Commitment. The cup finals. Want to tell us about your perspective? I mean, we've all been there, but everyone from in a different way.
Yeah, I have a lot of memories from that week, and like first of all, it was really nice the way they set it up. Like when you arrive, you already get this feeling. Oh, okay, this is something bigger than just a normal game. You arrive at a really nice hotel right in the city. You have like nice rooms, good food, people walking around in suits and like some nice stuff. So it was like already the first interaction there was like, okay, this is something bigger. And then of course, like first practice in the arena, everyone's kind of looking around. Okay, this is huge. And I would say I have more memories around the game than the actual game. Now that I've watched it back a few times, I do remember some plays also, but I remember everything leading up to the game, and then also in the locker room we were waiting a long time to get on the court, and then I remember a lot of the celebration afterwards with the fans and being on the court and trying to really soak it in and try to remember it, and I was successful with that.
Yeah, I totally get that. You're kind of a bit intimidated by the arena. That was exactly my reaction when I walked in there.
It's
something else. We do have a great arena, don't get me wrong, but it was like 4 times bigger in terms of capacity. It was just impressive.
Yeah, I agree. I think we talked about it before the trip, and I think it was of course it was Same for Friedrichshafen, but for our team, it was, I think TK was talking about it a lot. Like, he was there, was it the first time?
Two times,
yeah. So when he was there, they would come from the Gelsenhalle, which is a small gym, and then they would go play in this huge arena. He said it was like such a shock and like completely different style and play of volleyball. And for us, like, luckily we have this great arena here and we've been playing big games in a big arena. So it wasn't like a shock, but it was still, when you walked in, it was like bigger than anything that I've played ever.
Let's wait for next year. So even bigger. I think like 20,000 people capacity, 20,000,
yeah.
Compared to 12.5.
But let's qualify for next year first.
No, it's
out of the question.
We guarantee that.
Oh, it's written somewhere in the contract.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was really funny. I saw the four finals, and the beginning. It was just an event. It was a sensation that we were in the final.
Yeah.
And I think it was the highest loss we one team ever had in this game.
Okay.
And but we had a party.
Yeah.
And so it was okay. We knew that it could work. It did. But I think we would celebrate you even if you don't win.
Yeah.
Because we want to have fun. We want to be there and want to have. We want to enjoy. You play in a really good. You are in such a great shape, all the team, and it's so funny to look and to enjoy. And sometimes only a little things decide if you win or lose. So
yeah.
And life is too short for thinking about worth things. Yeah. For that, I want to want to have a party there.
Or thinking about losing such a game.
Yeah. No, I think for us as players, we knew that whatever the outcome would be, we have a club that supports us. We have a crazy fan section that always supports us, even though we're losing a game or winning a game. Doesn't matter. There,
or playing in France.
yeah, it's always the same. So it was. It does make a difference to a player knowing that when you have a big game like this and you know that the president will not come to the locker room and start shouting at you if you lose, or Dirk coming to the locker room telling us what we should have done or whatever. So it's also about the fans. Like if you see a fan here in Lüneburg on the street, he will not come up to you like, how could you lose that game and stuff like this. So it's it does make a difference to a player knowing that you have a support system around you.
Okay.
I think if one fan did that, he would just get banned from the arena.
Yeah.
It was like 10 years ago when we went the first one in Halle, Westfalen, when we were there. It was, until the game started, it was about the same, like 1,000 people, maybe a little more there, party, and then we saw what you just explained. We saw the team playing in this big arena for like the first time, and they were just overwhelmed. And Friedrichshafen on the other side, they played international, and they knew those arenas. And then after the game, you were a little disappointed because it's okay, we expected something else, but it was no trouble. It was nothing you could blame the team for, and that would have been the same. It was just all so much bigger because we sold so many tickets, and so many other fans of Lüneburg were not only in our areas but all over the gym. We were like more than 2,000 Lüneburg fans, and it was so awesome. And okay, it was good that you won, but that was not the main thing.
Yeah. It certainly wasn't a bad thing that you won.
Yeah, I agree. Like you said, I think what the club can take away from this day that we have is, of course, it's nice to have the first trophy here. But I think the way this club works and how it's developed, it would have come eventually. At some point, if it wasn't this day, it would have come eventually. Like how the club's been working. So like you said, what you can take away from this weekend is more about what happened around the game. I think that it's unbelievable that we have 2,000 fans traveling to watch us play, and I can't thank you guys enough for doing that.
Oh, we too.
Yeah.
We all had fun. Yeah. 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 I mean, seeing Dirk in the front row just cheering everyone on.
Yeah, he did a new job, I realized.
We had a little trouble because they said we get 2 megaphones, and we got 1 megaphone, and it was a megafünchen.
The tiny one.
It made you not louder, but the other way.
So
a
mini phone.
So, we had to, like, you know, do something we never do at home because we have the microphones.
Yeah.
And we
you're loud
work
enough
with the crowd much differently. And so, you know, I have to, you know, wave my arms. And I didn't even know what came up to the other blocks up there. I don't know if they heard or saw that or whatever happened. It was just too big.
Wolfgang, you sat on the upper floor, didn't you?
Yeah.
Or, yeah. It's like 2 different things from what I've heard. You didn't hear what the people downstairs did. And
we looked for them and tried to make these what they do.
Yeah.
It was so special because we had the block down there and we could start in the first rows. We could start like SVG something and they would start up. And then the first rows of the upper rank, they could see that. And they had to start because the upper rows, they didn't even see what was going down there. They could see the court, but they couldn't see down on the ranks. And that was really special that day. And we're gonna, so if we get there next year and the arena is even bigger, we're gonna deal with that differently. So,
yeah, that's great.
Just like take the whole lower floor.
Yeah, because usually after a game, okay, the voice is kind of stress. But after that game, the voice was gone.
Gone, yeah.
It was gone, totally.
We've heard it at the cup party. On Sunday. Dirk lost something. It was his voice.
But Dirk would say, let's see if we qualify.
Oh, yeah.
I think he would say.
Yes, yeah, of course.
That's the thing for next season.
Okay, let's change the tournament. Let's talk a little bit about Poitiers. How difficult was it for you to play after such a final against Friedrichshafen, to play 2 excellent games on a really high level against Poitiers? How did you make this?
I think actually this game gave a lot to us for those matches also. I think the game on, was it Wednesday, was the home game?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, after the crazy weekend. It was really strange to go into that game. We knew that it was a really big game for us, really tough to kind of try to leave the cup behind, but to get ready for that game, it was like so strange. And I think I would give a lot of credit to Stefan and how he handled that. He always makes his pre-game speech in the locker room, and he said that he also felt weird, and that was really like a really nice moment for a player to be like, okay, because some coach could have been like, hey guys, you need to be professionals now, like you really need to forget all the partying and stuff and now we focus on our game. But he also said like, okay, like we're all human, we can feel nice about the cup still, let's go out there and like try to ride that wave of nice momentum, like he always says. So I really felt like he made a big difference on that day into our the feeling and the focus inside of the team. It was really easy to go out there and just do our best again. And yeah, I would say the home match was a really, really good match by us. And also there in France, we started well, had some trouble in the middle of the game. They also played well, but then at the end we got some payback from Sporting. We were down, I think we were down 24-21, and then we came back. Ethan had a really, really good service run. We made some, Daniel finished some points. We made fought as a team to get those points. But yeah, I think it was a little bit of little bit of payback from what we lost in Lisbon with that tough fourth set. Yeah. So I think we deserved to get some magic back also.
Great. Yeah. I mean, the end of the third set in France was it exhausting? Like this, what felt like 10 minutes of challenge?
Yeah, that was interesting. Yeah, it was
the fourth set.
But yeah. Fourth, end of the fourth set. Yeah, it was. So Daniel hit the ball, and we challenged touch on the block.
Yeah,
it took a while.
It did.
So, yeah, and then finally they saw the touch. Touch on the block, and then Poitier challenged that Daniel was over the midline under the net, and also that took a while. And then there was some talks with the referee. Their players were also talking, trying to convince the referee to make the decision go their way. But yeah, it was a long time, and us players were just talking on the court, like trying to stay focused. If whatever happens, we're ready for the next point. But yeah, it was really, really, really a good feeling after winning that, because it was for us, like Poitiers is, I would say they're like have a little bit bigger budget, some more known players. Mm-hmm. But I think we as a team and as a club, we really proved that we could play with some good teams this season. So I think that was another nice step for our club and our team.
If I would compare when you started in the season, you developed as a team. So it was a great development. We can see from outside. And I hope you can stay there on this or ride the wave again. Yeah. The next games are it's really interesting, like you developed especially as a team.
You mean keep riding the wave?
Yeah.
Who says they're down?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, and you see that that what Stefan does is he actually gives a lot of responsibility to the team, and they have to adjust with that. So it takes a little while. We had phases in the league where we had some 3-2 wins, where those teams were not likely playing with us in the upper level of the league. They were more down, and everybody was wondering, okay, what's happening? And what is happening when a set goes the other way? Okay, usually there's got to be somebody. Like 2 years ago, we had Eric Röhrs, who would go, ah, and everybody would fall, or someone like Gage. And the team had to find its way, and it took a little longer like that, but there's a lot of substance, and that's the wave now that we got now. The team knows, okay, there's a fifth set, we will most likely win it, because we always did. Look back, and the last fifth set we lost was, I don't know, 1981.
Yeah. That was it's been a while.
At the beginning of the season somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
Not even Freiburg was a 3-0. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
I think I might be wrong, but it could have been in the League Cup against Berlin in the final.
Oof. When you lost the fifth set. Oh yeah, that could be. Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
And the team and the club needs games like the game we had where we lost that set. Where we were in the lead 24-19, something like that, and actually looking back, you say you cannot lose a set like that, and it happened. Everybody was really, really disappointed, but that's what helps you to recover and make another step forward and get bigger and take that as an experience, put it in your pocket, and then get. Step
yeah, we talked about it with Christian a while back, and he said this, even from those sets is no use in blaming anyone, but you just have to analyze what went wrong and do better.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that was a really big moment for our team this season, like a learning moment of another thing that Stefan always says, we have to, as a team, take it. We cannot expect teams to give it to us, and this game, what we're seeing in our background right now, we went into that fifth set with that feeling of we're gonna take it, and that night in Sporting really taught us that.
Mm-hmm. So let's change a little bit from the tournament to the rituals. Do you have any rituals before the game?
When I was younger, I would have so many rituals, and
so many.
Yeah, like a lot of rituals. So now I've tried to like one by one limit them and take away most of them, because it's always. I noticed when we started traveling more as a team, like when I was also still playing in Finland and last season in Poland, I noticed that when you're on away trips, it's really hard to have those rituals if you have like a morning ritual or a afternoon ritual that you do always on a game day. It's really tough to do those things on the away trip. So I've tried to limit them, but I would say I have maybe only three things anymore. So I always take a cold shower before we go to the arena before I get ready. And then the second thing is I always have my jersey and my towel, and I put it in the same spot on the arena. And then I always do the same warm up. So I would say those are the only things that I have anymore as like rituals.
Yeah, okay. That sounds really okay, because yeah. I think some things should be used to it, and then maybe it's easier for you to make your
nothing super complicated.
Yeah exactly. And I really ran into that trouble when I was younger, and then if I wasn't able to do my rituals, I went into the game can I play well today, because
pressured yourself
exactly
too much. Yeah.
Exactly. So I've learned from that and tried to limit those distractions in a way.
Yeah, just like some small thing. I know Gage used to like clean his flat on a game day, like okay. in the noon, just so he comes back to a clean place. And I think TK said it likes to go for a coffee, especially on the away games.
Man, how can I forget? That's my ritual with TK. We always
oh, yeah, it's
on
you
the
too.
Away
yeah.
trips. On yeah. the away trips, we always go. Grab a nice cup of coffee somewhere, try to find a roastery or a nice cafe in the city we're playing in, and TK's the coffee master, so I let him take the lead on that, and I just walk behind him to the nice cafe. He always finds the good places.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay, do you have any personal goals as a pro player?
Of course, like we have a saying in Finland that kind of it's tough to explain, but when you eat more, your hunger grows. So the more I succeed, and the more nice games like this cup final I have, I think the expectation grows everything grows, but I've already exceeded my expectations for myself, so I'm already like way over what I even dreamt of as a kid. My biggest dream was to make it in the highest level in Finland.
Okay.
And so I've already gotten that, so everything I get now is just a bonus, and I'm trying to enjoy it as much as I can. Yeah, really trying to limit putting a goal like somewhere really high, because if I don't achieve that, I might feel like my career was a failure. So I really try to think of everything right now as just a bonus of some hard work and dedication. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. For a setter, you have a lot of time up to now for your dreams.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for your goals. Okay. In most cases, our guests have also different sport hobbies or so. What which kind of sport do you like to play, or do you play?
If any, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I don't play much other,
really?
other sports. Okay. When I was younger, yes, I would like play every different kind of sport, but I would say I've just been in love with volleyball so much that mm-hmm. My whole year is around volleyball, and I like doing it so much that when I do practice by myself or whatever, it feels like it's a hobby. So I've never had so many hobbies anymore. Mm. I like to exercise also by myself, but I wouldn't say I have a second sport that I play on my free time anymore.
Even no beach volleyball in summer, or
not so much actually.
Okay.
I don't have a lot of time also during the summers with the national team. We play volleyball, so
okay.
So not even beach volley so much.
Do you watch any of the other like Bundesliga games? Because I've heard from Jesse that he doesn't do it because it feels like work to him.
I would say I watch some games, but pretty rarely. I watch a lot of the Polish league and the Italian league, Champions League, Japanese league sometimes in the weekends in the morning when I wake up. So
oh, they have shit times. Yeah,
yeah. It's really fun because my girlfriend doesn't like it, but I like it. When I wake up, I can just click on the TV and there's volleyball again. So for me, it's great.
So she just accepts it.
Yeah,
exactly. Okay.
Yeah.
That does take some patience.
Yeah.
So she did she move here with you?
No, she's actually kind of in and out from Finland. She's studying Finland, so she isn't able to be here all the time. But it's been really good this season with her. She's had a lot of time to come here, and we've both really enjoyed being here. And there's so many things to see and to do here in Lüneburg and around Lüneburg. So we really enjoyed it here.
Speaking of Lüneburg, we always have the questions like, what's your like impressions, feelings about Lüneburg so far?
No, it's really, really, really pleasant. I remember, I think it was the first day. Jürgen had like a small city tour for me and my girlfriend, and I think the first place I drove my car somewhere close to the Alterkran.
Yeah.
And then we like my first image is the river and the flowers and all of that, like during late part of the summer when I arrived here. It was like I thought like, okay, this is a beautiful place. And then just seeing all the different architecture, like it's by just the eye test, it's a beautiful town. But I think what really makes it is of course the people here. So it's been a really, really nice experience so far.
Yeah, even starting with a guided tour, it's
yeah,
kind of a perfect start. You learn a bit, you see the beautiful parts of the city, and you learn a bit about it.
Yeah, it was really, really great to have him show us around a little bit, and like with his knowledge from the city, it was really really easy to start understanding also some of the history and the most known places of Lüneburg.
I still need to do one of those.
Yeah.
I've been living here for over 20 years and I've never done one of them.
Yeah, you really should. You really should.
Especially if you live in a city, it's kind of a new perspective doing a tour like that.
Yeah,
I should ask Jürgen about this.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the quiz. And at first, I have to ask you, what do you want to drink? What do you like to drink or to eat, or as your price? Which you can get. Question is to you both.
you can start.
Okay, did I get this right? So we have a quiz, and if we succeed, like, we can choose anything we'd like.
You win a little something.
Like not everything. If you need a new car, no.
And you don't get the title.
Well, if I win, I'll take a good cup of coffee.
Let's okay for okay. I think we can arrange this with an idea. I just heard of you. I think I remember in the right way that you were interested in the Lüneburg shirt.
Oh yes.
it's just only one thing.
No, I did say that, and I think I remember who some fan I saw.
Just someone told me yesterday.
Yeah, I saw wearing the shirt, and I would really love to have a shirt, and I think Jesse already got his shirt.
Really?
With his name on it, so okay. I was a little bit jealous of him. I would love to get a Lüneburg
with the autograph of 100 people of the Lüneburg.
That would be great.
You decide.
Autographs, please.
Okay.
Please.
Okay. I have to write down, and you can explain the rules.
That's a first.
And I write down.
And I took a cup of coffee.
I think I get the better prize if I win.
Yeah. Definitely, that's a first. Yeah. Like most what did we have? We had beer, we had wine, tea even.
Yeah.
Chocolate.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had ticket. Chocolate.
Bourbon or whiskey, something else.
Oh yeah, we had whiskey things. Last season for Michael.
Seems like you had guests who like alcohol, huh?
No, when we had Axel Larsen here. He wanted to have apple juice sparkled because he said it's not possible to buy it in Denmark. You have to mix it up, but you can't buy it
all right. Okay,
together.
Okay. Yeah.
Denmark is a weird place.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm allowed to say that.
Which size? Sorry.
XL? I think large.
Large is,
is fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I should explain the rules. Yes. Yeah, we do. It's a tiny quiz. We have some true or false facts about each other's country. So you get a couple of facts about Germany. Dirk gets some about Finland. And you have to say if they're true or false.
Okay.
So we start with Santi. You get some three facts about about Germany.
Yeah.
And you just have to say true or false. So the first one, is it true? Hamburg has the most bridges in Europe.
True.
It is.
That's correct.
I knew that. Really? I saw that somewhere. Yeah, I saw that somewhere.
Many people think it's Venice, but...
No.
Hamburg has six times more bridges than
2,500.
That's many. It's about 2,500.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
You don't think... It would be that many.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised. Number two, in Germany, you're not allowed to vacuum on a Sunday. Like vacuum clean.
I would like to say true, but I think it's false because it's probably something with you guys really trying to keep Sunday as a rest day. So it might not be like a real law or something. So I'm going to say false.
Yeah. It's not by law, but you always get angry people looking at you when you're allowed on a Sunday.
Yeah, I kind of felt that when I was vacuuming on a Sunday.
Oh, and your neighbors hate you.
Yeah,
you can't
think,
mow the lawn. Yeah. You can't mow the lawn on Sunday.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
You're
okay.
Not allowed to.
Yeah.
Great. You have 2 points up to now.
Good.
Nice. Third one. The 23rd of April is also the day of the German beer.
Don't know this one, but my guess is true.
That is correct.
Good.
It is, which is coincidentally also my birthday.
Oh, nice.
I would say every one of us here is sitting didn't know that the 23rd of April is. Did anybody know? No.
A friend of mine told me because his birthday is also on the same day and he likes beer.
Nice birthday.
It is, yeah. Nice, you got 3 out of 3.
Good.
Good start. Now, Dirk, three things about Finland. Number one, the Finns have the highest per capita consumption of coffee in the world.
No. No, I don't think so.
It's true.
They have? Really?
The Finns drink the most coffee in the world.
I have to go there.
Yeah, we really, really drink a lot of filter coffee. Filter coffee is the thing in Finland.
Okay.
We have our Mokka Masters. It's nicely set up right in the middle of the kitchen. You just pop it on, and everyone also, like, I don't know if you do it here in Germany, but in Finland we also do the thing, like, or many people do the thing of they set it up already the evening before. And then in the morning, you can just wake up and press the button and you don't have to actually see any...
You get the smell.
Exactly, yeah. So, we have a lot of filter coffee lovers.
I don't know if anyone does that here because I don't drink coffee.
Yeah.
I'm a tea guy, but I have plenty of coffee fanatics around me. But I didn't know it's the Finns that have the highest coffee consumption. Nice. So you got that wrong. Good for you, Santi. Number two, Donald Duck in Finnish. I hope I pronounce it correctly. Akuanka was once forbidden in Finland because he wore no pants.
I would have known about the bridges in Hamburg.
No, I think these questions are really fair.
They are.
This sounds crazy. Forbidden, no pants. No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
Correct. It's kind of an urban legend that it was, but it wasn't. Nice, you got that one right. This should be an easy one. Number three. As of 2024, the Finns are the happiest people in the world.
Yes, they are. I heard about that.
You're correct.
Yes.
They are.
It's a thing of Scandinavia, I would say.
Yeah,
mostly Scandinavian people.
No,
I hope you too, also in Germany, yeah. One of the happiest.
I think the top four are Scandinavian countries, and then Norway is like on number seven or something.
Yeah. No, I just watch Santi on the court and I see
most of the time he's and you're the happiest happy. Man in the world.
Makes me happy too.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Santi, congratulations.
Thank you.
You've
thank
won.
You.
But if all of our guests are always winning, so
no, yeah. Dirk doesn't
everyone
get his coffee.
Gets his prize.
Okay.
Okay, I think then is the moment where we will switch in German.
Yes, sir.
You can decide if you want to sit here or eat something. Or
yeah.
Feel free. You can eat all the snacks.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Lieber Dirk?
Yes.
Also, Sandy, if you just want to throw something in, kind of a comment, feel free. if you understand anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Something for drinking? But only with alcohol now.
I'm good. Thank you.
That was like for Finnish people when we talk German. Is it like very, very far away or is it some kind of familiar?
No, there's some similarity and like I've tried to learn some German also, but when you speak a little bit too quick for me. Yeah. I can't really understand it. But there are some pronunciation differences that are a little bit difficult for me as well. So I wouldn't say that they're really similar. I think there's some quite a big difference actually, like with how you guys speak.
Mm. I think it's like that the other way around as well.
Yeah.
If you have Finnish, it's just it sounds like gibberish to us.
Yeah.
If you don't speak it.
That's what everyone's told me when I call whoever back home in Finland on the bus and then Jesse is walking past and he's just like blah, 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 and makes fun of me. So
same with Danish though.
Yeah. Yeah.
So ich muss jetzt erstmal meine Zunge wieder durchrollen, um das in Deutsch hinzukriegen. Ja,
schaffst du schon.
Dirk kennt eigentlich jeder, der in der Halle mal war als Hallensprecher, weil wir wollen eigentlich gar nicht mehr über deinen Job als Hallensprecher reden, sondern eigentlich, du hast ja noch einen ganz anderen Job. Oder Jobs, weiß nicht, wie ich sagen soll.
1, 2, 3.
Kannst du mal so erklären und so mitnehmen, was du so eigentlich so treibst für die SVG? Du machst ja eine ganze Menge.
Ja, also ich bin laut Bezeichnung Head of Event und Sponsoring. Event ist halt unsere Hallenshow in der Arena. Und auf der anderen Seite Sponsoring, das hat vor ziemlich genau drei Jahren begonnen, als mein Vorgänger Kjeld Döring uns weggekauft worden ist von der SVG. Und ich fliege ja schon ein bisschen länger um die SVG, eigentlich fast schon 10 Jahre, war dann mal als Hallensprecher da und Andreas und ich hatten Kontakt. Und als Kjeld dann diese Mail schrieb und sagte so, ich düse jetzt los, da habe ich eigentlich gedacht, oh Moment mal, was ist jetzt los? Und in dem Moment, wo ich dachte, ich müsste Andreas mal anrufen, da klingelte das Telefon und Andreas rief bei mir an. Und deswegen bin ich halt jetzt auch in dieser Position tätig. Und wir sind eigentlich auf der Geschäftsstelle, im engeren Kreis der SVG, doch relativ wenige sozusagen. Und deswegen macht man im Grunde genommen also fast alles. Also wir haben schon grobe Bereiche, die wir aufgeteilt haben, aber wenn es jetzt um Saisonabschluss geht oder um Fahrten und alles Mögliche, dann ist die SVG immer noch so organisiert, dass eigentlich jeder mit drin hängt.
So. Okay. Aber im Grunde von deinem Lebenslauf her ist es ja für dich gar nicht so weit weg, also Sponsoring oder so. Ich glaube, du hast ja auch mal als Wirtschaft mal was gemacht.
Ich habe hier in Lüneburg Betriebswirtschaftslehre studiert, auch mit dem Schwerpunkt Marketing. Und das war eigentlich meine Richtung. Ich bin aber während meines Studiums hier über Radio Zusa gefallen, diesen lokalen Sender. Da habe ich dann eine Ausbildung gemacht und gelernt, dass da doch also von meinen Fähigkeiten doch auch eine Menge verborgen lag. Und bin dabei geblieben. Also gerade was das Radio anging, da haben die Leute immer gesagt, oh, das musst du weitermachen. Hier so bei Radio Zusa fing das an, ich wollte eigentlich Comedy machen und habe dann irgendwann, weil jemand krank war, einen Moderator vertreten und haben die gesagt, das musst du wieder machen. Und dann habe ich irgendwann im Rahmen eines Volontariats, also Ausbildung, da habe ich 2 Jahre dort gemacht, hatte ich 2 Praktika zu machen. Das eine habe ich bei NDR2 gemacht und nach einer Woche haben die auch gesagt, oh, du musst unbedingt hier bleiben. Und das ist jetzt schon über 25 Jahre her.
Aber wie sieht deine Tätigkeit aus als Sponsoring-Chef, Head of Sponsoring?
Viel Kaffee trinken, rumsitzen, andere rumscheuchen.
Nein, also viel reden.
Grundsätzlich ist die SVG ja ein Projekt oder ein Gebilde, was sich unheimlich schnell entwickelt hat und entwickelt. Und Head of Sponsoring ist halt, wir sind als, sage ich mal, sehr erfolgreicher Sportverein, hier habe ich vorhin schon gesagt, in der Region verwurzelt. Und die ganze Wirtschaft hat Interesse, auch mit uns zusammenzuarbeiten. Und das muss man halt lenken. Und im Grunde genommen sind wir dafür zuständig, dass das, was wir da machen, uns dann auch so finanziert, dass wir weiterhin solche Dinge tun können. Ich finde es immer schön, wenn es in der Zeitung steht, SVG Dinge tun, wenn wir Modena schlagen oder wenn wir Izmir schlagen da im Halbfinale, wenn wir Berlin im Golden Set schlagen und dann in der Champions League letztes Jahr eine Runde weiterkommen. Das sind so die Dinge. Wir müssen halt dafür sorgen, dass das, was da in der Halle passiert, irgendwie finanzierbar ist, weil das ist vielleicht auch etwas, was schwer zu verstehen ist. Wir arbeiten hier auch in Deutschland auf einem Volleyballmarkt, der im Vergleich zu Italien und zu Polen super klein ist. Und das, was wir da gerade im europäischen Bereich machen, wo wir dagegen anstinken, da fragen sich die anderen immer, wie machen die das? Also wie geht das? Also wir haben eigentlich gar nicht die Mittel zur Verfügung wie die und müssen anders haushalten. Und deswegen ist es halt wichtig, dass wir das, was wir erfolgreich in der Halle machen, dann auch so monetarisieren, dass wir den Trainern genügend Mittel an die Hand geben, damit die sagen, wir kriegen im nächsten Jahr mindestens wieder ein Team, was genauso gut ist.
Ich muss weiter insistieren. Wie muss ich mir das vorstellen? Also geht ihr auf die Firmen zu oder ist das Event so groß, dass die Leute, also zumindest hatte ich das von Andreas Balburg auch so früher mal gehört, dass er sich eigentlich gar nicht um eine sogenannte Kaltakquise kümmern muss. Ich weiß nicht, wie jetzt der Stand ist. Wie geht sowas?
Also ich würde da fast ein bisschen widersprechen, weil Andreas stellt sein Licht ja auch immer gern unter den Scheffel. Ich weiß, dass Andreas gerade in den ersten Jahren eigentlich an alle Türen geklopft hat und den Leuten versucht hat zu erzählen, pass auf, da ist eine Vision, wir wollen mal Bundesliga spielen und dann später, wir wollen mal in der Arena spielen. Und der hat an alle Türen geklopft und sagt, wollt ihr uns nicht helfen und könnt ihr uns nicht helfen? Und inzwischen ist dieses Projekt SVG so groß und so erfolgreich und dreht sich selber so schnell, dass sich das schon ein bisschen umgekehrt hat. Also es ist weniger oder eigentlich so gut wie gar nicht so, dass wir Unternehmen ansprechen, sondern wir sind als Werbepartner, als Imageträger so attraktiv, dass die gesamte Wirtschaft auf uns zukommt. Und gerade jetzt, wir sind gut zwei Wochen nach unserem Pokalsieg, merken wir das auf jeden Fall schon. Und uns ist halt auch klar, dass wir nicht nur uns entwickeln müssen, sondern den kompletten Volleyball mitentwickeln müssen. Es geht uns natürlich um die SVG im Kern. Wir wissen aber auch, dass wir an gewisse Decken stoßen. Wenn wir noch besser, noch größer werden, dann müssen wir trotzdem irgendwann nach Freiburg fahren und da sind auch 3000 Leute und Ludwigsburg und vielleicht auch Warnemünde, die ja jetzt dann doch in der ersten Liga bleiben. Wenn wir eine Liga haben, die eine solche Stärke hat, dann wandern die Spieler auch nicht mehr so leicht nach Frankreich, Italien oder Polen ab.
Sehr schöner Begriff, an Decken stoßen im Bereich von Volleyball, aber finde ich gut. Du hattest es gesagt gerade, dass du nach dem Pokalfinale, dass ihr es gemerkt habt, heißt es, da rufen jetzt mehr Leute an, also entwickelt sich da mehr, also ist dieser Pokalsieg in Deutschland stärker beobachtet als das, was wir bisher hatten? Also ich meine, wir standen schon im Finale vom CEV Cup, wir haben in der Champions League es übers Viertelfinale rausgeschafft. War das weniger im Mittelpunkt und dieses Pokalfinale hat eine größere Ausstrahlung? Wie würdest du das so sagen?
Ich glaube, dass in der Wahrnehmung der Menschen in der deutschen Medien- und Sportlandschaft einfach ein Titel ganz anders zählt als das Ganze drumherum. Also uns, die wir in diesem Projekt arbeiten, muss man das nicht erzählen. Also dieses Projekt SVG ist in meinen Augen absolut großartig, weil da so viel Gutes entstanden ist, aus klein immer größer geworden ist. Aber wir haben halt gemerkt, gerade auch in den letzten Jahren, im Umgang mit Medien, im Umgang mit Sponsoren, dass wir schon in einem Fußballland leben. Also wir sind super attraktiv, wir haben ein ganz tolles Image, aber viele Sponsoren, die jetzt noch nicht bei uns in der Halle waren und das nicht kennen, die sagen, oh, Volleyball. So, und das haben auch viele Zuschauer, die sagen erst, boah, ich weiß nicht, Volleyball. Wenn die in der Halle waren, dann haben wir die angezündet, weil das Event so toll ist. Und trotzdem gibt es viele Sponsoren, die sagen, ich gucke mal lieber bei einem Drittliga-Fußballverein und zahle da noch viel, viel mehr Geld. So, aber die ganze Struktur ist so ausgelegt, dann bin ich im Fernsehen, da ist die Aufmerksamkeit viel größer. Und das ist halt diese Decke, von der ich da sprach, die wir durchstoßen wollen. Wir wollen den Volleyball insgesamt größer machen, um dann dafür zu sorgen, dass am Montagmorgen halt nicht das ganze Land über eine Schiedsrichterentscheidung im Fußball spricht oder über ein Tor, sondern dass sich auch immer mehr Menschen dann am Montagmorgen über Volleyball unterhalten. Und hier bei uns in der Region funktioniert das schon super, aber es ist halt eine größere Aufgabe, das auch in ganz Deutschland hinzubekommen.
Da gehört es ganz viel zu. Wir sind ja im Endeffekt hier nur ein kleiner Teil des Puzzles. Du hast gesagt, das ist ein deutschlandweites Ding, dass das hier weiter Fuß fasst. Und gerade in einem Land, das so von Fußball dominiert ist, danach kommt ja auch noch Handball, Basketball ordnen sich ja auch noch irgendwo ein und dann irgendwo erst Volleyball. Und da musst du halt erstmal gegen ankämpfen. Und ich behaupte mal, das funktioniert bei uns bisher gut, weil du es auch sagtest, hier in der Nähe ist kaum was. Das nächste hier ist Hamburg. Aber hier um Lüneburg rum haben wir so einen kleinen Puffer, wo halt in der Klasse erstmal gar nichts ist.
Ja, und ich glaube auch, dass hier der Begriff gegen ankämpfen, das erlebe ich bei einigen Sportarten so, gerade beim Handball. Da hat man das Gefühl, dass die versuchen, vom Fußball so einiges zu kopieren und dann gucken, dass sie auch was ein größeres Teil von dem Kuchen abbekommen. Denn wenn man die Zahlen sieht in der deutschen Sportwerbelandschaft, alles, was durch Sport generiert wird, 85% davon bekommt der Fußball. 85% und alle anderen Sportarten haben 15%. Also das ist die Verhältnismäßigkeit, in der wir da arbeiten. Und deswegen versuchen wir gar nicht von uns aus dagegen anzuarbeiten, sondern wir haben halt die Möglichkeit, gerade mit dem Volleyball, wo so viel neu entsteht. Wir haben so viele in den letzten 3-4 Jahren so viele neue Fans dazu bekommen und die prägen wir auch ganz anders. Wir wollen gar nicht gegen Fußball gegen anstecken, wir machen es einfach ganz anders. Wir machen so viele Dinge, die die Menschen vielleicht auch beim Fußball gar nicht so mögen. Und bei uns in der Halle gibt es halt was anderes. Das merkt man vielleicht auch manchmal. Wir haben auch dann, wenn wir sogar mal Pfiffe haben, was da selten mal passiert, aber dann arbeiten wir auch immer direkt gegen an in der Halle als Hallensprecher, weil wir sagen, das hat hier nichts verloren. Bei uns kommt es ganz viel auf Wertschätzung an, von dem Gegner gegenüber, den gegnerischen Fans gegenüber, weil wir genau das wollen. Und das macht uns der Lüneburg super vor. Also es gibt, glaube ich, keinen Verein, der mehr verwundert guckt, wenn wir in Osteuropa sind und die Polizei bringt euch zum Block. Weil unsere Fans sind so anders, die gehen überall hin, die schließen Freundschaften, die sagen, hey, wir kommen hier und wir wollen uns gerne austauschen, damit es wirklich um den Sport geht und nicht darum, ich muss nicht den anderen Verein schlechter machen, um meinen besser dastehen zu lassen.
Ich würde gerne nochmal bei dem Punkt bleiben, nach dem Pokalfinale. Ohne dass du jetzt Zahlen sagen musst, das wäre Quatsch, aber ist eine Entwicklung, die weitergeht. Also wir haben ja so circa Anfang der Saison, glaube ich, hat auch Berlin oder Cavinehoan zumindest auch mal gesagt, wir haben ein bisschen was verloren, wir haben, glaube ich, 2 größere Sponsoren verloren. Die Situation ist ja jetzt derzeit wirtschaftlich auch nicht so toll. Kann man das halten durch den Pokalsieg? Ist es in etwa gleich oder entwickelt sich es noch nach oben hin? Und wie gesagt, du musst dich nicht festlegen.
Nein, das ist auch schwer, weil das wäre noch viel zu kurzfristig, um das zu sagen, wie die Effekte nachher sind. Also grundsätzlich haben wir jetzt nicht das Problem, wie zum Beispiel auch Friedrichshafen vor geraumer Zeit, die einen großen Sponsor verloren haben. Bei uns ist die Entwicklung noch anders, weil uns immer noch mehr Leute wahrnehmen, weil die Halle noch voller wird, weil wir jetzt eigentlich fast ausverkauft sind. Die letzten Jahre ist der Zuschauerdurchschnitt ja, wir hatten vor 3 Jahren hatten wir 2.200 Leute, dann hatten wir 2.600, jetzt hatten wir 2.973 letztes Jahr und wir werden jetzt das erste Mal über 3.000 gehen im Durchschnitt. Und sind damit eigentlich fast der einzige Standort, der solche Zahlen hat.
Und damit nimmst du alle Spiele, also auch die Mittwochsspiele mit rein, ja?
Alle Spiele.
Okay. Das sind alle Spiele. Weil das ist ja schon ein Ding. Also ich habe es gemerkt, als ich früher ja auch so ein bisschen auf die Zahlen geschaut hatte, waren wir eben an den Mittwochsspielen einfach deutlich unter den 3.000, weil einfach die Leute da nicht so die Zeit haben. Und wenn der Trend jetzt auch noch an den Mittwochsspielen dahin geht, das ist natürlich sensationell.
Es sind immer mehrere Trends. Also dieser Trend kehrt sich fast ein bisschen um, weil diese Mittwochsspiele jetzt für viele Leute auch sind, die sonst keine Tickets kriegen. Also wenn wir ab Weihnachten herum, wenn wir in den Weihnachtsferien oder rund um die Weihnachtsferien spielen, sind die Spiele immer ausverkauft, weil die Leute dann Zeit haben, weil viele dann auch nach Lüneburg vielleicht zurückgekommen sind. Und so ist das jetzt zum Saisonende auch. Wir haben jetzt gegen Dachau gespielt, das Spiel war ausverkauft. Wir werden jetzt Mittwoch gegen VCU Berlin spielen und auch das Spiel ist so gut wie ausverkauft. Gibt es vielleicht noch ein paar Stehplätze, irgendwo wenige, aber das Spiel ist so gut wie ausverkauft, weil die Leute sagen, jetzt lieber nochmal, wer weiß, wann ich wieder ein Ticket bekomme. Ist natürlich super schön, die Situation.
Absolut. Man kann es ja fast als Luxusproblem bezeichnen, wenn es heißt, ja, wir haben Probleme, genug Tickets vorzuhalten. Also es ist ja immer schön, wenn es da ankommt. Die Quote Dauerkarten ist ja gewachsen. Das sind jetzt inzwischen 25%, wenn ich mich nicht irre.
Das ist ja, auch die Rechnung, also, ja, ganz so einfach kann man sie nicht machen, weil da sind ja noch andere Tickets mit dazwischen. Ja. Aber wir haben halt im letzten Jahr 930 Dauerkarten ungefähr verkauft innerhalb von 2 Tagen und mussten dann Schluss machen, weil wir können nicht die ganze Halle mit Dauerkarten und wollen wir auch nicht ausverkaufen. Und in diesem Jahr wird das auch wieder so sein. Wir haben halt den glücklichen Umstand, dass die meisten Leute in die Halle kommen und egal, ob sie was mit Volleyball anfangen können oder nicht, die gehen wieder raus und sagen, hier will ich wieder her. Und viele sagen auch, ich möchte Dauerkarte haben. Also die Nachfrage ist halt unheimlich hoch und das wollen wir natürlich ausnutzen, um dann auch halt solche Jungs hier länger zu halten.
Das kann ich genauso bezeugen mit dieser Entwicklung, wo Dirk sagte, war es einmal da und danach gleich Dauerkarte. Ich habe 22, erstes Modena-Spiel, habe ich meinen Vater mitgenommen. 3. Saison mit Dauerkarte jetzt. Der ist voll hooked. Jetzt.
Ja, das sind halt auch Erfahrungswerte, ja. Denn als ich vor 3 Jahren angefangen habe, dann habe ich viele der ersten Gespräche auch mit Sponsoren, da war Andreas noch dabei, der hatte das ja vorher gemacht und dann bekommst du ein Gefühl dafür und merkst auch relativ schnell, dass du dir viel von dem Gerede eigentlich auch sparen kannst und sagst den Leuten einfach, da ist das nächste Spiel, komm hin, guck's dir an. Und danach sagen die meisten, okay, wo soll ich unterschreiben? Weil die verstanden haben, was wir da machen. Und dann kommen wir zurück auf den Punkt, über den wir vorhin gesprochen haben. Wir wissen halt auch, dass es zwar schon um Volleyball und um Sport geht, aber im Endeffekt geht's um Emotionen. Aber wir wissen halt auch, wie wichtig ihr als Fanclub seid. Dieser Block, der da ist, der immer da ist. Ob wir in Tschechow im Finale sind vor einem Jahr und da oben sind 55, 60 Leute und machen einen Lärm in der Halle und die sind nicht tot zu kriegen. Und im positiven Sinn, die sind nicht tot zu kriegen, die sind immer da, die sind immer positiv. Und wir haben teilweise, auch unsere Jungs spielen mal ein schlechtes Spiel, aber es macht keinen Unterschied. Und wenn wir verlieren, dann singen wir trotzdem mit den Leuten und die singen alle mit. Und das ist halt auch ein Stück weit einmalig und das beeindruckt Leute, die dann zum einen sagen, ey, ich möchte Teil davon sein. Ich finde es gut, dass ihr so viele Jugendmannschaften habt, weil das ja auch bei uns sehr im Fokus steht. Und die wollen sich mit committen. Und das ist genau das, was wir suchen. Wir suchen keine Geldgeber in dem Sinne, sondern wir suchen Familienmitglieder. Wir suchen Leute, die sagen, das, was ihr da macht, die Werte, die ihr vertretet, das finden wir großartig. Lass uns das zusammen machen.
Ist das Thema Nahbarkeit ja vielleicht auch noch irgendwie mal ein Ding? Das ist ja alles wesentlich, du sagst das familiärer als zum Beispiel jetzt im Fußball, dass du auch einfach auch für die Leute, die die Mannschaft toll finden, dass du einfach viel, generell viel dichter dran bist und nicht irgendwie so alles unerreichbar und sowas. Das ist ja auch, denke ich, nochmal ein guter Selling Point für sowas. Auch wenn es jetzt nicht die Reichweite wie Fußball hat, ist ja eine andere Art von Vorteil, wie man du daraus hast.
Ja, ist halt eine Nahbarkeit, die in beide Richtungen geht. Die Spieler finden das ja auch sehr gut, nahbar zu sein. Hm. Und die sind es auch noch nicht gewohnt. Ich habe sehr lange im Profifußball auch mitgearbeitet. Und da ist es halt komplett anders. Die sind komplett abgeschirmt. Das sind alles Superstars. Die meisten sind dann auch, wenn es in die erste Liga geht, sind Millionäre. Und das ist was ganz anderes als Santi und das Team hier.
Ja.
Ja, trotz allem fällt es uns natürlich wesentlich leichter. Man muss immer sagen, Erfolg macht sexy. Wir hätten natürlich weniger Leute da, wenn wir nicht diesen Erfolg hätten. Ohne Frage, wir hätten, glaube ich, immer noch eine gute Stimmung. Aber es fällt natürlich auch ein bisschen schwerer. Das muss man dazu sagen. Spielen natürlich auch in die Karten rein. Es gibt durchaus Vereine, und das ist auch das Schöne gerade in der Entwicklung, wenn man jetzt ein bisschen weiter schaut, Warnemünde entwickelt sich gerade sehr schön, gerade von den Zuschauern her. Und das ist halt das Schöne, wenn du das schaffst, als Verein eine gute Stimmung hinzukriegen und bist trotzdem Vorletzter jetzt gerade. Die werden auch eine Entwicklung machen, da bin ich mir sicher. Und ich habe das früher an Rottenburg immer bewundert. Sie haben relativ häufig verloren, aber hatten immer den zweithöchsten Zuschauerzuspruch. Also es war Wahnsinn und im Grunde genommen ist es das jetzt, wo wir uns finden, nur wir sind deutlich erfolgreicher.
Ja, für uns ist das aus der Position natürlich jetzt leichter zu sagen. Wir haben viele Vereine, auch Warnemünde zum Beispiel. Ein Vertreter von denen werden am Mittwoch jetzt auch in der Halle sein. Ich war jetzt, als wir beim Auswärtsspiel dort gespielt haben, war ich auch da. Und es war total schön zu sehen, nicht nur, dass die Helfer auch alle rot anhatten wie bei uns, sondern dass das auch ähnlich strukturiert war. Da waren ganz viele Leute, wo man gemerkt hat, die brennen für die Sache, die bringen ihre Zeit da rein, die haben alle Aufgaben, die jetzt nicht, das geht über ein normales Hobby hinaus. Die haben sich viele Gedanken gemacht. Dann war der Hallensprecher von denen schon einmal bei uns, hat sich das angeguckt. Und das ist voll in unserem Interesse, wie ich schon gesagt habe. Also je besser Warnemünde, Freiburg, Ludwigsburg und wie sie alle heißen, funktionieren, desto eher kommen wir auch unseren nächsten Zielen näher.
Zusammenarbeit ist ja auch das große Thema. Gerade bei so Aufsteigern, musst du ja nicht direkt als Konkurrenz sehen, weil spielerisch ist es auf dem Level nicht direkt die Konkurrenz, auch wenn das die Saison sehr unvorhersehbar war, gerade mit den weiter unten platzierten Mannschaften. Stichwort Dachau. Die können, wenn sie wollen, oder sie werden überfahren, auf fies ausgedrückt. Aber es ist halt alles nochmal ein Stück näher beieinander gerückt und ich denke, es ist auch ein gutes Signal, dass Warnemünde jetzt nicht absteigen muss durch die Fusion von Haching und Herrsching. Ist ja nur von Vorteil für alle, also gerade für den Norden, weil sonst hast du ja nur Lüneburg wirklich im Norden. Gießen lasse ich da jetzt mal raus. Geht ja nur voran. Und wenn Rottenburg tatsächlich aufsteigt, haben wir wieder eine 15-Team-Liga und reichlich Spiele, die wir dann nächste Saison wieder schauen können.
Ja, und das ist halt auch das Wichtige, dass du Auf- und Absteiger hast. Ja. Denn es hat ja jahrelang auch den Zustand gegeben, auch für die SVG. Wir hätten ja schon ein paar Mal aufsteigen können vor einigen Jahren und Andreas hat gesagt, nein, wir sind noch nicht so weit. Und da siehst du halt auch den Unterschied. Eine Mannschaft im Fußball wie Elversberg, die aus der Regionalliga aufsteigen und dann aus der dritten auch gleich in die zweite Liga und dann auch wieder oben mitspielen. Für die ändert sich das komplett, weil die zwar eine höhere Konkurrenz im Sport haben, aber finanziell sind die natürlich extrem gut ausgestattet. Die bauen sich direkt ein Stadion hin und die haben ganz andere Mittel. Und im Volleyball bist du halt ein super Einzelkämpfer. Und wenn du dann ein Jahr aufsteigst und dann vielleicht im nächsten Jahr wieder absteigst, dann finde mal jemanden, ein Unternehmen, das sagt, ich investiere mal 30.000, 40.000 Euro bei dir, mal gucken, was draus wird. Das macht ja keiner. Und deswegen kann man auch gerade die Leistung von Andreas Balburg in den ersten Jahren und dann Matze Pompel macht das ja auch schon länger. Die kann man gar nicht unterschätzen oder überschätzen, diese Leistung, was die gemacht haben. Weil du bist im Volleyball halt wirklich erstmal Einzelkämpfer irgendwo in einer Region, um sich dann so zu entwickeln. Also wirklich, wir sind in einer unfassbar glücklichen Lage im Moment, in der wir sind, auch mit der Arena, die für uns ja ein absoluter Gamechanger war. Und natürlich gibt es da auch, es gibt überall kleine Problemchen, so, aber die Vision, die dahinter steht und die Andreas mal hatte und die wir jetzt umsetzen, da ist halt das Wichtigste daran, dass es weitergeht. Also das war mein Moment zum Pokalfinale, dass erstmal habe ich gedacht, zwei Punkte vor Schluss, habe ich gedacht, oh mein Gott, jetzt passiert es gleich wirklich. Und als es dann passiert war, bin ich erstmal, der Andreas stand so schräg hinter mir, da bin ich hin, habe ich gesagt, das ist dein Pokal, den du da geholt hast. Und dann haben wir uns so angeguckt ich habe so gewartet, dass er was sagt, und er sagte dann, und das war erst der Anfang, habe ich gesagt, genau, genau.
Gut gesagt.
Weil das wäre das Schlimmste für uns, dass wir irgendwo an einen Punkt kommen und sagen, toll, alles, was wir wollten, so toll, das darf nicht passieren.
Also nee, überhaupt.
Auf keinen Fall, wir haben noch so viel vor und es soll noch so viel passieren und wir können noch so viel so wachsen und das wird noch so viel größer und so viel schöner.
Also den Punkt gibt es auch nicht, an dem du Andreas wohin bringst, wo er keine Vision mehr hat. Also ich glaube, das gibt es nicht. Er sprüht immer. Das ist der Wahnsinn. Das ist wirklich der Wahnsinn. Okay. Aber wir haben dich übrigens, wo wir gerade beim Pokalfinale waren, auch in einer neuen Rolle noch gesehen. Du mal in der Rolle als Anfeuerbiest. Das war neu für mich. Hast du glänzend gemacht.
mit dem Mini-Megafon.
Also ich glaube, am Tag danach konntest du nicht sprechen. So ähnlich hattest du dich ausgedrückt.
Ja. Das gerade so. Nicht. Man hat dich übers Mikro noch gehört.
Nein, wie gesagt, es war eigentlich anders geplant, weil ich hatte auch gedacht, dass ich vielleicht das Spiel einfach nur mal so angucke. Aber das hatte sich dann ein Stück weit erledigt, weil wir natürlich so den Drang hatten, dann auch die Leute mitzunehmen und das zu organisieren. Also, dass unsere Fans laut sind. Wir waren auch da die lautesten in der Halle, das war uns schon vorher klar. Aber das hat natürlich nochmal eine andere Wucht, wenn du ein Stück weit sagst, komm alle zusammen. Mhm. Und das werden wir auch, sollten wir nochmal in so ein Finale kommen, das nächste Mal auf jeden Fall auch anders organisieren. Weil ich weiß, bei Suhl zum Beispiel, beim Finale vorher, da standen ja vor dem Block dann auch zwei, drei von denen und die haben das organisiert. So, und das würden wir dann auch nochmal so machen. Also das war wirklich, deswegen habe ich nachher auch nur noch gezeigt. Und so, ich habe teilweise nur so getan, als wenn ich gerufen habe, gar keine Stimme mehr dabei.
Muss ja reichen, das fällt ja nicht auf, wenn du jetzt leise bist. Ja. Wenn alle drumherum laut sind, macht es da auch nicht mehr den Unterschied.
Das war so ein tolles Erlebnis. Ja. Natürlich den Pokal gewinnen und die Mannschaft zu sehen, die das da holt. Aber den ganzen Tag und auch später dann in diese vielen glücklichen Gesichter zu gucken, die man schon so lange kennt und wo man weiß, der hat schon ganz viel investiert und der hat auch schon jahrelang und die alle so glücklich zu sehen, das war wunderschön. Das war so ein toller Moment. Und auch die teilweise, es war ja so viel größer auch, da waren ja teilweise Fußballfans noch mit dabei und die kanntest du gar nicht, aber die waren dann auch mit dabei. Das war wirklich großartig.
Ja. Wir haben ganz gut Leute mobilisiert bekommen. Also über 10% der Halle voll machen, das schafft auch nicht jedes Team. Suhl kam, glaube ich, gut ran. Die hatten ja auch eine Armee dabei. Es war dann auch von Vorteil, dass sie direkt neben uns standen. Und dann am Ende haben wir ja mit die Suhler angefeuert, die dann danach weniger. Aber nach so einem Spiel wäre ich dann auch wahrscheinlich schon gegangen. Ja, das war für die, glaube ich, auch extrem anstrengend und nervenaufreibend, wie es das für uns war.
Ja, das Gute war, dass die Siegerehrung nachher zusammen war.
Ja.
Wenn die Siegerehrung der Frauen vorher gewesen wäre, dann wären die Fans alle auch nicht mehr da gewesen. Oder die meisten von denen nicht mehr da.
Und wir wären nicht vor 12 aus der Halle gekommen.
Ja, stimmt.
Ja, jetzt haben wir, wie gesagt, schon ein paar Rollen von dir so besprochen. Anfeuerbiest, Hallensprecher und ich wäre hier die ganze Zeit hinsichtlich der Zeit, also wir sind schon gegen Ende angesprochen, aber wie kriegst du dann deine Tätigkeit noch mit dem NDR zusammen? Wie kriegst du das so gebacken?
Also durch das, was ich beim NDR mache, das mache ich ja schon ziemlich lange und da habe ich mir zeitlich gesehen eine gewisse Freiheit erarbeitet, sozusagen. Also das heißt, ich kann langfristig mit denen planen, wann kann ich und wann kann ich nicht. Und ich weiß halt auch, dadurch, dass ich ja während der Woche eher abends dran bin und dann am Wochenende, hat das eine gewisse Planbarkeit. Und das natürlich, ne, das quietscht auch mal so ein bisschen an der einen oder anderen Ecke. Und die Tage sind teilweise auch extrem lang. Aber dadurch, dass ich mir das halt ein Stück weit einteilen kann, kann ich mir die Freiheit nehmen, bei der SVG die Zeit zu investieren.
Das hört sich gut an. Und damit hast du fast schon eine Überleitung und damit freut sich Björn, weil er so ein bisschen auf die Uhr geschaut hat.
Zeitmanagement.
Wir nehmen uns jetzt die Freiheit, um zu sagen, ja, wir haben diese Episode sozusagen jetzt damit durch, Folge 47. Und wir können eigentlich nur sagen, thanks Santi for coming, we're having you here.
Thank you guys.
Wollen wir noch eine Zuschauerfrage reinschmeißen?
Ich war so von dir unter Druck gesetzt, dass ich die Zuschauerfrage vergessen habe. Haben wir noch eine Zuschauerfrage? Ups. Ich frage jetzt einfach mal.
Ich könnte sonst eine weiterleiten.
Ja, dann leite eine weiter. Dann mach es.
Ich,
du hattest den Kopf geschüttelt, hatte ich.
Ja, vielleicht.
Du
ja.
Darfst gleich auch noch.
Okay, dann.
This one goes to Santi, I think. I don't know where, but somewhere I read about your team WhatsApp group chat. Is it really called OnlyFans?
It is called OnlyFans. I have no idea why.
So it was like that when you came here?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just got added to a group chat of that was called OnlyFans, and I was like, no, this is strange to me. And then I saw it was Yosha adding me to the group.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, Yosha, you're doing something weird here. But yeah, I have no idea why.
I would be irritated as well.
Yeah.
Let's be fair. But I kind of like the name. You don't think of a team chat when you read that.
Yeah,
to be fair.
It's special for sure.
Okay, awesome. Dann haben wir noch eine zweite Zuschauerfrage. Chris, wenn du direkt mal hierher kommst, vor den... Oder kannst du mal hier?
Nimm Wolfgangs Mikro.
Oh, das sind tausende Zuschauer. Es sind tausende Zuschauer hier.
Wir sitzen eigentlich in der Arena.
Santi, how important is it for you and the team to have supporters on all the away games? Is it a special thing? Do you realize us, or how is it?
Oh yeah, you're definitely seen. All the Lunablog is we know you're there, and every time we walk into a gym, it's always nice to see some familiar faces. And yeah, I think personally for me, it really really makes a difference. It's always like, especially here in Germany, you have like, in most places you have a really really good atmosphere in almost every place. So having that support also for the away team, that it's us, it helps a lot. So yeah, the whole team really appreciates you guys, and we hope that you continue to come to our games also in the playoffs, and the more the merrier. Yeah.
And do you hear us?
Oh yes, yeah. Yes. Okay. You're definitely heard. Klaus is definitely heard. Yeah, we notice you guys. We hear you guys.
Klaus can be heard from across Germany.
Yeah, don't remember, he at the cup final, he was the first set, he was standing next to me. And it's 2 weeks later now, and my left ear still said, are you serious about that? Yeah. That was so loud.
You still wake up to dreams of Klaus just shouting, es war geil next to you, huh?
Yeah. You can awaken him at 4 o'clock in the morning and he will...
It's foggy.
Yeah.
That should be a ringtone.
Can I ask a question to Santi?
Sure.
Santi, that's a question for you. As we're seeing the final now on the TV screen right now, do you realize that, like, when you're after the game, after the play, you, like, explode? Do you feel that as well? Because by watching that, I say, that's the way it's supposed to be, you know?
Yeah, sometimes I can't remember. Yeah, it was the cup semi-final against Duren at home, and I was, when we won the last point, I remember I celebrated so hard, and I squeezed all my muscles that I have in my body, and I remember getting like a really bad neck twitch after that game. So I was like celebrating too hard, and I had to tell Lisa like I need some work done on my neck. So yeah, sometimes I feel it a little bit too much.
Celebrated too hard.
Yeah.
Never heard that before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not in that context.
Yeah.
Okay,
great way.
Oder?
Ja.
Jetzt sind wir aber durch, oder?
Ja. Great way to end it.
Yeah.
Dann, ich wiederhole es einfach nochmal. Many, many, many thanks to Santi.
Thank you, guys.
Many thanks to Dirk. It was a pleasure for us. It was really, really nice. Und wir hoffen, euch allen hat es gefallen, sowohl die hier sind, als auch diejenigen an den Kopfhörern oder wo auch immer ihr das hört. Denke, wieder eine schöne Folge. Und uns bleibt nur noch übrig zu sagen, Butter
bei die
Hühnen.
Wir sind die SVG aus Lüneburg. Ob groß, ob klein, ob jung oder alt, wir ziehen das Ding hier zusammen durch. Wir sind die SVG aus Lüneburg. Und ganz egal, wer uns gegenübersteht, unser Block hält Stand ohne Furcht.